This is 89.9 KCRW. I'm Jonathan Bastian, in for Madeline Brand. It's time for some film reviews. Alonzo Duralde and Dave White are here to guide us through it all. They're film critics and co-hosts of the podcast Linoleum Knife. Welcome back to you both.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, let's jump in here. First up is Godzilla Kong, The New Empire. It's directed by Adam Wingard and stars the two super monsters with human cameos from Rebecca Hall, Brian Tyree Henry, and Dan Stevens.
She can feel it. Kong, Godzilla, they can feel it too. Something is coming. Something even they're afraid of.
All right, Alonzo, this is the fifth Godzilla film in the MonsterVerse franchise from Legendary Pictures. How does the monster mashing compare to previous installments?
Well, Wingard previously directed Godzilla versus Kong. And if you're a Godzilla fan, you were kind of annoyed by how much Kong there was in that movie and not enough Godzilla. And this time, I think he's doing a better job of trying to balance it. The plot is very rarely the point, unless you're talking about something like Godzilla Minus One, the wonderful Oscar-winning Japanese film that came out at the end of last year. We get a reminder from Japan every so often, guys, this is how you do a Godzilla movie. It's cute that you people in America think you can make these, but step aside, please. But I will say that among the American movies that Warner and Legendary have been doing, this is one of the better ones, just because that climactic battle is pretty great. And along the way, you get little mini battles to keep you interested, because certainly it's not the people that we really care about here.
Oh, absolutely. Well, and Dave, I mean, director Adam Wingard called this film a monster character study. He said he wanted to make a monster film from the monster's point of view. I love kind of throwing some art house ideas into a monster film. Why not? Let's go for it. But I mean, does he succeed? Does this have some depth to it?
I think he's mostly talking about the first 10 minutes where we really feel sorry for sad old Kong, who's alone in the middle of Hollow Earth. There is nothing that you need to understand about any of this. There are giant monsters and they fight. I'm so old that I saw my first Godzilla movie when I was 8 in 1972. That was Destroy All Monsters. Now I get the senior discount at the West Hollywood Aquatic Center. So I have an affection for vintage Godzilla. And I always have to adjust my expectations when I'm walking into one of the current crop, because everything is digital. And I have, because of this, I've resigned myself to the sort of dispiriting march of time that will never again allow for a person in a rubber monster costume to fight on a set of miniature buildings. It's okay. There are many pleasures to be had, even in this digital landscape. There is a big, bad orange Kong-like creature riding an ice lizard like a big skateboard. There is it's not June yet. It's not Pride Month yet, but Godzilla lights up with a big pink spine and I just felt, ooh, gay pride. Like
it's like when they light up the Empire State Building in June, with a hot pink sheen going.
There are so many wildly visual, pleasurable moments in this film that even if you are old like me and wish for something that will never come again, you can still have a really good time here.
That's Godzilla Kong in theaters everywhere tomorrow. All right, next we have La Chimera, a magical realist film written and directed by Alishe Rohrwacher. Stars include Josh O'Connor, Carol Duarte, and Isabella Rossellini.
Era un mezzo mago. Così ce lo siamo portato con noi. Tutta quella bellezza, i vasi, l'oro. Tutto lasciato lì per un mondo che non si sapeva neanche se c'era. Il mondo delle anime.
This is the new film from Alishe Rohrwacher, who won the Grand Prix at Cannes for her film The Wonders and Best Screenplay at Cannes for Happy as Lazaro. What she cooked up for us this time? She's kind of a buzzworthy artist making some moves here.
Absolutely. Yeah, this time, Josh O'Connor, who you might know from God's Own Country, stars, and he is a British expat in Italy who is kind of running a gang of grave robbers. He has the gift of dowsing, I guess one might say, but instead of finding water, he finds Etruscan tombs. And so he is helping people find and loot artifacts. The thing about Rohrwacher's films, coming off of especially Happy as Lazaro, she has this great sort of in through the back door way of narrative where you're watching her films and you're not quite sure why things are happening in the way they're happening or in the order that they're happening or why she's jumping around from this character to that character. But somehow by the end of it, it all makes sense. And she has told you a complete story and she had to tell it in that way where there's this sort of chaotic orbit of characters and incidents circling around each other until they come and fuse in a perfect point in the middle. And so this is a movie that is about theft, but it's also about the value of art and antiquities. It's about the tissue that lies between life and death. And it is, it's told in a way that no other filmmaker right now, I think, would do it except for Rohrabacher.
It also looks really beautiful, you know, with gorgeous old Italian homes that are kind of falling apart. So I'm a sucker for that stuff. But Dave, the film digs into memory in our relationship to the past, and it's been called neorealist in the style of films of Roberto Rossellini, whose daughter Isabella, as I mentioned, is one of the stars. So mm-hmm. Is Rohrabacher also playing with film history here?
Oh, absolutely. Josh O'Connor's performance is like something from a silent film. He hasn't got a lot of dialogue. And what you learn about him and who he is comes very much from his increasingly disheveled appearance and his very conflicted, sorrowful expression. She does reference the history of Italian cinema in particular, not just Rossellini, but also Fellini and Pasolini in the way that her characters work with each other and sort of, as Alonzo said, bounce off against each other and sort of dance in a circle until they all come together at once. They are entirely idiosyncratic construction. She's not copying anybody. She is her own artistic force. And she leads you into wonderful and at times mysterious places. And you're, if you're the right kind of viewer, you are always happy to be led there.
Cool. You can see La Chimera at the Landmark New Art Theater starting tomorrow. Next, we have The Shadowless Tower from Chinese art house writer-director Zhang Lu. Dave, this follows a disaffected man in Beijing as he tries to reconnect with his father. Would you say it's a compelling character study?
Yes. But again, almost... Listen, this one kind of has a little bit in common with the Alicia Rohrabacher film in terms of how it deals with its characters. But first, the title, which refers to a white pagoda, which is a 13th century temple in Beijing. And because of its unique design, its shadow is very difficult to see. And that has given birth to a saying that that shadow can be seen 2,000 miles away in Tibet. So what that has to do with this film about, as you said, a meandering middle-aged food critic named Gu Wentong and his relationships that are familial and romantic. That can be found in Zhang Lu's other career. He's a novelist and a filmmaker. So he builds his characters around this fixed center. We see that the past is looming over them like this tower. All of the mistakes, all of the broken family and friendship ties, all of their patterns of behavior. We see them. We see the people intersect. There are visual and character-based ideas that repeat themselves. And this is a very quietly observational style of filmmaking that ultimately, I think, emphasizes a calm acceptance of all the things that brought you to where you are, both the things that you can change and what you can't or won't. It's a very beautiful, thoughtful film, and it's about really the choices that you have in life. And you only have one, and that's kind of to get on with it.
That's right. Well, I'm glad you brought up this theme of time. That's exactly what I want to talk about here. I mean, Alonzo, yeah, this is a film that's concerned with the past, the return of the past to the present. Anything else you would add to the themes that come up and how those resonate with those that are watching?
Well, you know, there's a recurrent motif here about people walking backwards, which I think really kind of characterizes so many people in the film, in that they're not looking at the future. They are dwelling on the past and where they've already been and how that's put them where they are now. And you also see these sort of generational developments where fathers and sons, fathers and daughters, mothers and daughters kind of do the same things, whether consciously or unconsciously. And so, you know, it brings up that famous phrase about the past is never done with us. It's not even past. And so, you know, there's even a scene where a group of elementary school children are singing a song that is apparently sung in nursery schools in China about how the leaves are all falling off the willow and nothing is as good as it used to be. And all around is nothing but loss. And you're like, my God, 4-year-olds are singing this song about regret and longing. So apparently, wow. I guess the movie is trying to say something about the Chinese character, that this sort of thing, look at the past, is sort of baked in. But certainly in the characters, as we get to know them, they are all grappling with their own childhoods, their own decisions along the course of their lives.
All right. You can see The Shadowless Tower at the Lemley Theater in Glendale starting tomorrow. Last up, we have Wicked Little Letters, directed by Thea Sherrick, starring Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley.
I think you've been set up, Rose. Is there anyone who'd want to do such a thing?
Have you got a pen and paper?
I like you, Rose, and I'd like to bring you to the light.
Why would I send a letter when I can just say it?
Oi! All right, Dave, this is based on a true story. It's the Little Hampton poison pen scandal of 1923. I'd never heard of it. Apparently it was a scandal. It was a real thing. So what happened, and is this adaptation doing it justice?
It is based on a true story, although the film here is immensely fictionalized. There was a poison pen letter scandal in this little seaside town in England. And there was a young woman, a sort of nonconformist Irish woman, who was accused of doing it. But there was very little evidence to convict her, other than that she wouldn't behave herself properly in public. And she uses a lot of profanity. So you think this kind of sets you up for a cozy mystery sort of thing. And it does, until it doesn't. And about midway through the film, they solve the mystery. And then the film becomes about something else. It's all played for laughs, because frequently the film wants those letters to be the location of the humor. That can wear off after a bit. It's also all played very lightly until these sort of odd tonal shifts, when it detours very sharply into brief glimpses of the dark and abusive home life of Edith. And mostly it wants to be about misogyny, but also sort of keep its distance by returning to the contents of these wildly naughty letters. It's kind of the goofy flip side of this 1943 French film from Henri-Georges Clouzot called Le Corbeau, which has a very similar plot, and it was entirely fictional, and it was so bitter and rancorous and so true to life that it was banned by the Nazis during the occupation. So this movie doesn't fully come together the way you want it to, but it is really funny, and I think I would recommend it anyway, because Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley and Anjana Vasan are so wonderful the way they play off of each other. They almost make you forget that there's not a lot else going on. They are terrific and consistently funny.
Well, yeah, Alonzo, this is a blockbuster cast, reuniting Colman and Buckley, who starred together in The Lost Daughter. Talk a little bit more about their performances. It sounds like they hold up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're given pretty basic notes to play, but you do get to know these characters better and sort of understand what's driving their kind of external presentations to the world. And so, the movie does have this. There's definitely kind of a feminist messaging about what the traps laid for women by society in 20th century England, and how those get overcome. And there's a deep bench of character actors here, not only Timothy Spall, but Gemma Jones, Eileen Atkins, Lolly Adefope. And, you know, they make the movie worth watching, because even though the movie reveals the mystery about halfway through, everybody in the audience has figured it out well before the film decides to reveal.
You're not surprised when they tell you who did it.
And so, you know, it definitely falls under that kind of like cozy period piece mantle. You know, these aren't wealthy people. It's not like you're there to look at the tea sets and the tweeds. But, you know, it definitely has that level of charm to it. And sometimes the charm and the performances are kind of all it has going for it, but that's enough.
Wicked Little Letters is in limited release tomorrow. That does it for this week. Alonzo Duralde and Dave White are film critics and co-hosts of the podcast Linoleum Knife. Thank you, guys. This was fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.